There are a number of, I think, would be to assess the public hearings now. I've called this meeting specifically today for that purpose. I don't think we want to go into deep discussions about what was said and what was not said, which are good points and which are bad points. I think the purpose of the meeting is just to collect the information, because I think it's going to be very important that we have the information in proper form when we eventually get down to do a final and a clause-by-clause assessment. So this, I think, is just one of the first meetings we're going to have in terms of assessing the public hearings. I think from this meeting what we would like is just that we have a proper minute, record of what was said. The more important point, any points that the members feel that was raised in the public hearings that we did not pick up in the written presentation, any particular points that was well made or that was highlighted in the public hearings that we did not also pick up in the written presentation. Again, I want to repeat what we said in previous meetings, and that is that there has been a number of requests from various people and organizations to make further submissions, and it's also one of the things that we need to consider, whether we are going to open up for further submissions. I think we've also made it clear from the beginning that the interest in this particular bill and the concerns raises of such a nature that we cannot just dispose of this thing in a fast fashion, in an haphazard fashion. And my view would be that it will only be appropriate that if there are people that have an intention of making a meaningful contribution to the process, we should not be turning our way away from them and preventing them from making a submission, particularly if the submissions are from a different angle, a different perspective, which might bring the committee to understand and to work from a more informed position. That would be my approach to further submissions. I know COSATU has approached me. They were intending to be party to the previous hearings, but a lot of the organizations that have been interested in making submissions, unfortunately, were caught up in the whole public hearings of other committees, particularly the public hearings relating to the DSO. And because of lack of capacity, they were not able there to choose priorities, and for that reason, some of them have presented there, have not presented here. But again, my view would be one shouldn't disqualify people because they don't have the capacity to operate in all the committees that are simultaneously dealing with legislation. Some organizations do have the capacity to be at all these meetings, others don't. I mean, from our committee point of view, we should be understanding, because I think our view would be, rather my view would be, that this is a very delicate process we're dealing with, a very delicate piece of information, piece of legislation, and we should not try to exclude people. It's always been the understanding that we'd rather include than exclude people. And so I'm trying to support the view that we should look at taking further submissions at some time. But that's something we'll deal with later. I think the other issue which is of importance is the international trip. And members will recall that the motivation behind the international trip was particularly to get the committee to interact with an overseas country from which we can learn in how they had developed their legislation, similar pieces of legislation, and for this reason it was the view originally of the committee to undertake an overseas trip to get that comparison and interact with politicians and officials overseas, and to get a broader understanding of what we're dealing with. So the Indians who we had targeted for this purpose apparently had some political problems of their own. I understand now from the communications that the problems have been resolved. The communication channels have now opened again with our staff and their staff. Because the parliamentary program changed, we were not able to undertake this trip now within August. And again, I would like permission to interact with the people at Parliament to see whether we would be able to undertake this trip perhaps sometime in September or when it suits the parliamentary program. Because the time that we had targeted, the August period, did not suit the Indians because of their problems that they had. Then, members, down to the business for the day, which I think is just to have an overall discussion so that we can correct some of the more important things that were said for our records. Before we go through to that process, are there any questions?
Just from the House, but this, this now regarding the other two votes, are we previous in terms of meeting with the minister?
As directed by the meeting last week, I contacted the minister. The minister has confirmed that he will be present tomorrow. And what we have on the agenda tomorrow, the two votes, and the issues of that we had raised regarding the policy decisions, obviously the mayor would naturally interact with the minister. So I expect the minister to be present tomorrow. The details of that meeting is in the parliament. Any other question?
We're not meeting on Friday.
At this stage, there is nothing on what's named for Friday. I think you will recall, if we take the information bill, for example, it's something we need to do. We need to assess, and we're going to do public hearings. And so, as I said, the process today is just to consolidate the information and then take that process forward. So it seems that we are not going to be able to process this bill any further immediately. We still need to look at the whole question of the further public hearings. There's also the question of the cost implications, which we will interact with the minister tomorrow on that. It might well be that they will have to give us the cost implications here, which in the information bill is also saying no. And I think it's something we have to discuss with the minister tomorrow. As regards the other bills tomorrow when the minister is here, you will recall that the NCC conceded last week that there were cost implications. In order for us to take those two bills further, we will have to get a proper financial set out from them. And I would expect them to interact with a whole range of departments before they are going to be able to report back to us. I don't know whether they're going to be in the position to report back tomorrow. We have not been told that they are in a position. I think we will hear from the minister what is the position of the but I think there also we would need to consider whether we are going to really be in a position to proceed until such time that we know what the financial implications are. So, but let me not preempt what might come out of tomorrow's meeting with the minister. But I think that might answer the question on the other two bills. We'll deal with the minister tomorrow. We'll raise our concerns and then just see what the procedure would be after that. For that reason, I did not want to set down Thursday or Friday for a meeting and then unnecessarily burden you. Had the NCC come back to me yesterday and said, look, we are in a position, this is what we do, I might then have considered and raised it with you. But at this stage, there is nothing I think we can do. We don't want to call a meeting just for the sake of calling a meeting, although Parliament has set down these weeks for the processing of legislation, and I thought it would be irresponsible not to call a meeting at least today and tomorrow on these particular issues.
So the question was just related to our personal logistics. Other meetings applied
for. At this stage, we will decide tomorrow if there's anything serious or drastic that comes after tomorrow meeting. I think we, as a committee, will decide then whether that is something that needs to be dealt with immediately or not. For myself, I've not been able to see any reason. Then, honourable members. Oh, sorry. We must be like the Cape Townians, man. The honourable Ngabadali, sorry.
Chair, I'm responding to our first question, which also has a political question from the side. And I want to say for in terms of how to carry on the free of the government, I'm not going to evaluate the content. But traffic, the word traffic, it has manifested itself in since you started. It is a particular kind of traffic that we're talking about. I don't know how, I don't want to blame any person, but somehow I think in our country, coming from where we come from, we haven't really spotted out what type of media we need to use for our public to get information. The public that was here is the public that knew information Act before 1994. And now, the public that need to know about protection of information and what are we saying, what are we amending from the old Act now, they can hardly tell what was in the old Act and why the old Act arrived at calling it the protection of information. So I'm trying to say we'll finish this thing someday, but the public has not been so I would like to agree with you in terms of looking at how can we postpone the closing date, not just for fun, but if we want to stand really not guilty, we need to check what makes the public. I heard Joanna saying a capability of people that are some are small in the human power, number of people. That is still better. I'm deployed where I'm deployed. People were looking at on TV, they come across copy, and they say, you guys from the TV, how are you taking copy for this hearing of yours that makes me want to be the constituents? There are just a couple of copy. What do you say? What do you say really? Well, that's a justifiable question. Then when I left yesterday from someone who was a woman parliament in the area. So people of all walks and all kinds are there to ask questions about whatever they want to do. So many MECs, the whole track from far, okay. My fear is that we are continuing to make intelligence to be the main of few people. And yet, it's just like any other. It is on how that you can make it to the domain, but what it is, the public has the right to know what intelligence is, because the former intelligence was not the intelligence that we thought it had to be. Now we are amending. We are losing a whole lot of people. I don't know. That's why I'm saying I've got no point to pay for. But maybe when we are all together, whatever, we need to assess how quite dangerous for the public, and the media and to you. Is it during the public meeting? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Nkaba Dali. Look, I think to be fair to the Honorable Member, at the public hearing, the Honorable Member had indicated in the beginning that she wanted to say something regarding the process that was being followed. And towards the end of the hearing, after Mr. Gilead presented, she had raised her hand, and I thought it was at that stage that she wanted to say what she had intended to say that day. It was only after the meeting that I established that I had in fact overlooked what she had wanted to say, that what she had said in regard to what Mr. Gilder had presented was something different from what she wanted to say. And I think what she's raising now is particularly what she wanted to raise then, if I'm correct, Honourable. And it was particularly this thing that, you know, the Honourable Nkaba Dali has been complaining that when it comes to public hearings, very often we do lip service to what we are actually supposed to be doing, and we don't actually get down to the public, and particularly from an intelligence point of view, it seems to be the domain of just a few, as she says. The public doesn't really get to know what's going on. And so I think she's right that, but I have made this point from the beginning that it is not our intention to exclude people, but I think she's taking the point a little bit further, that we need to go out there and reach the people, because those that want to say something, that read the newspapers and see the televisions, are different from those that don't read the newspapers and don't see television, but are also they represent millions of the people of this country, and the legislation would eventually affect them. I think the point that the Honourable Member is making is that we need to look at and perhaps if we look at further submission, at in which way can we reach out at a broader section of the population, if I'm correct, is that what the Honourable Member is saying? And members, I think we need to note that the point that the Honourable Member is making. Are there any other further questions? I see the Honourable Swa.
Chair, I referred earlier, but since it's been mentioned now, well, particular reference to the public hearing, when you perceive that we will take some decision, I'm just concerned about, well, I agree that we should have this as wide and open as possible, but eventually at some stage there needs to be a cut-off date. My only concern is, you know, late in this year it's going to be a little more difficult for all of us to be on a continuous basis involved down in Parliament. I just don't want that to get to a point that eventually this whole thing peters out into a... I think if you also look, you talk about the study tour in September, just bear in mind most of us will be in October be at the conference. So eventually we're going to get to a point that sometime late in October, November. My question is just, when are we going to discuss this further opening up of public hearings? You mentioned COSATU. Are there a number of them, or is it primarily COSATU at the moment? And also, of course, our colleagues' concerns. I don't know to what extent, you must bear in mind, Chair, the moment we finish with this, and it's come to the end, it will go to the NCOP. But the owners are committed, they will start with most affairs, so they will take it to the provinces. Then in what way they are able to reach, in particular, the part of the public that our colleagues are concerned about in a better way than we would be able to do so. I think these are things we need to discuss and then get some idea of where we're moving, even before we start flagging or highlighting certain things from parts of, opening up from parts of the public hearing while we continue with others. So I just want to ask an indication as to when you intend that we discuss this and take some decisions.
Look, Honourable Swart, what I said earlier is that Parliament had originally, if you recall, given us the 20th of June, and I applied for an extension, and the extension that was granted was the 29th of August to process At the time we were dealing with the 20th of June and even the 29th of August, I think we just had the one bill, and then suddenly the two extra bills came, so we were stuck. Were then saddled with three bills. Now, I think when we saw the two smaller bills dealing with the NCC, the perception might well have been that these are quick bills and it could be disposed of very quickly in a week, and I think that is much the perception that everybody had, but we see that that is not so. I mean, there were a number of errors in the bill, there were a number of serious things that need to be considered, and so those things have now got stuck in the system. As for the information bills, much the same applied. I don't think Parliament looks at these bills and say, well, look, we don't think you should take more than a week. I think Parliament looks at the parliamentary program and then says, look, you know, see what you can do, and they expect the committees to come back and say to them, look, this unfortunately is not going to happen. Now, that is unfortunately what the position is at the moment. It's unfortunate the NCC bills have resulted in us having to consult much more on the matter than what we expected. As regards this bill, you've seen the public, the public hearings rendered, and then there is a desire that there be further consultation on the thing. The unfortunate thing is that we cannot now, for the sake of finalizing the bill, just rush. I don't think anybody disagrees that this is a bill that needs serious consideration. And so what we're going to have to do is just, what I will do is when I write to Parliament now, to say we won't beat the deadline, is just to explain these things and see what type of answer we're going to get in terms of processing. I mean, the next plenaries are running from the 15th to the 26th of September. Committee period is from the 8th to the 12th of September, and if we are going to do the trip, it's more likely going to have to be in that period. I don't know whether Parliament would give us permission to go overseas and deal with the plenaries, because those plenaries, if I understand it, particularly going to deal with processing legislation. And so it would be a whole question of quorums and things like that. So, but I don't think we've run out of time yet. You know, I don't think we've run out of time yet. It's not the time now to throw in the towel and say, but look, we're going to need extra time, and there isn't extra time, and therefore let's call the match off. I think there is still sufficient time. But we're going to have to see. I don't have it in my power to dictate as to how the parliamentary program is going to play itself out. I take the Honourable Swartz's consideration that we are going into an election year, and there's going to be a lot of political activity as we draw closer to the end of the year, and I'm sure people will want to be in their constituencies too. But that's unfortunately not a call that this committee can make. We can only report to Parliament what the position is. And for that, as I said, it was essential that we have our meetings and assist and do the work until such time that we know where we stand. So let me approach Parliament and see, maybe by next week we'll have a clearer indication as to what, and we take it from there then in terms of the parliamentary program. Because I don't know.
Yes.
I don't know, you know, that there's anything further we can say on this matter. We need to just see what Parliament's position is going to be.
The short of it is, before we take a further decision in terms of extending public hearing to work for Parliament.
Yes.
And that's what I was trying to
do.
My long answer, my question.
Fine, members. Then is there no further questions?
Well, I'm not sure where we are now. Are we done with this particular aspect? Or is it still not addressed? Once you raise it right at the beginning, where we now want to address you on public submission.
Yes, I think I want to get to that particular purpose for which the meeting was in fact called, that we just identify some of the issues without debating them, some of the important issues, that we can just capture them. There is a draft minute, and I don't know whether you want to work from the draft minute. There's a minute. or whether you would prefer that we just capture this in another document. Honourable
Chairperson, thank you very much. No, I think that Mr. Lander's question was a straight question about the whole process, where are we standing? And I think that you were correct. I mean, we have already taken a decision on that this is a very, very complicated bill, and we need more time. We can't finish this thing in this time. And I think that I thought that all of us agreed on.
Thank you, Anurudham. What Mr. Lawrence raised earlier on, where do we go, what do we do today? What the purpose of the meeting was just to collect. We're sitting with a whole lot of documents, some prepared by other people, nothing prepared by the committee on what the key issues were that were raised in the public hearings. We have a minute. Now, the minute is so bearing really on what I'm just saying. There are some key issues picked up by the staff. If the staff is keeping minutes of the meetings, we will eventually deal with these minutes. I just thought that if you had a look at the minutes, you might get some idea of what we're trying to do. Not that we want to process the minute, leave the minute alone. What we want to do is just capture some of the important issues that was raised, that as a committee we can say, look, we've identified at the public hearings these are the things that were raised. Okay? At the moment, what we have is a whole set of documents. We as a committee don't have our own document. It's only going to be a working document, but at least we would have something. If we were to capture this in one document, at least we would have a working document on the room. That, I think, is what the purpose of this thing is. Not a perfect process. Mm-hmm. It's a process just to gather our thoughts without debating the issues. Just to gather our thoughts and put it down in a document. We would then be able to, in the future, refer to this document before we forget what happened at the public hearings. And as time goes on, you're going to start forgetting what took place at that public hearing. Now we hope that some of the things are still very, very vivid in your minds. And we just want to capture some of those things. So some of the things that were said at the public hearings, and the manner in which they were said, the tone in which they were said, creates a different impression, different representation in your mind when you just read the cold written presentation. We're not saying that the presenters abandoned a lot of their points, but you interacted with them, you questioned them, you saw, for example, that all the presenters had conceded that there was a necessity for the legislation. That's an important point I think we should gather. There are other important points that the presenters made, that the legislation was not clear. That they're having problems with fire, the information legislation, in implementing it because of the problem of the wording and the complexity of that legislation. And they were warning us not to follow a similar process. They were, if you remember, the advocate, the lady advocate, was particularly concerned that the general public was not going to be able to understand what was being said here. And it's points like that which I say we should gather. These points did not come clearly from the written presentations. And things like that, I think, the committee should gather as in their own document, so that when we proceed in the future, we actually have our own little document we can fall back on. Rather than take out all these documents and start scratching them, I think it's a useful process on the Google. So I don't know if you want to take it, I would be quite happy if the honourable members are just going to talk on from thought, and then the secretary can just record, and you don't have to go through it. I mean, first gather your thoughts, take what is vivid in your mind, and then let's capture the debt, Honourable Landers, and then so.
All right, so let me try and keep
what about procedural suggestions?
Sorry.
Sorry, Chair, that's my question. I just wanted to make a procedural suggestion. No, this is fine, this it's jumping from floor to floor.
Yeah.
You wouldn't want us to start, take the bill itself, and say, well, chapter one, are there any specific things that came up from the hearing that we need to flag? That type of process. This is simply going to jump around. I just looked at the minutes now, and it's indeed going to jump from section 20 to all these things. I don't know.
Honourable Member, there's a procedural suggestion here that we take the bill and then just go from clause, or rather from chapter to chapter.
I was going to follow this draft minutes, sort of extract from that, you know, those crucial issues that came out of the public hearing as the public said.
Yes.
Not as we see the bill. Because if you look at the bill, you'll see it differently. And if you ask Candy, she'll say, well, this is how I see it. But if you want us to go that route, well,
no, can I rewrite my suggestion, Jay?
Yes, sir.
This is fine. If I might. Can I then just request that as we minute the contents of this meeting to get to a working document, that working document eventually be chronological in order in terms of the specific sections?
Just I'll get back to you now, Honourable Member. You see, when you this process, if you, in an informal manner, it's easier to take your thoughts out, because you sit and think. Well, I recall that advocate saying something, and that's what I think we would like to catch. You see, and what I think Honourable Landers is saying that he's looked at the minute and immediately his mind has revised itself about some of the issues. And when we start going by clause, I think you it's a process which I think we're going to do at some stage.
Yeah, I see what I'm trying to start addressing is the question you raised right about what is it that we derive from the oral presentation.
Yeah.
Aside from that, there are other aspects which those presenters didn't pick up.
Yes.
That we still want to address you on.
Yes.
And, you know, I don't want to even start going anywhere because that will divert us quite a bit. you know, so I thought that's what we should do first. Address you as you requested right at the outset. And then, well, other members may pick up on issues that I have missed, both from your draft minutes as well as a result of my very poor memory.
So just before you proceed, Honourable Landers, I'm just wondering whether you might be so kind as to give the Honourable Vardy an opportunity to speak first, because I know he's got a committee meeting. He's got a committee meeting, and I'm sure he's going to want to leave soon. Have you got time?
I don't mind you.
I thought that he was meeting at 10, but if he says that's fine, Mr. Honourable Landers, then I'll hear you.
No, Chair, I've just quickly gone through the draft minutes that staff have presented us with. And from that, I've highlighted some issues. And I could see right at the outset. I may well miss some particular interest and I will continue that right now. I think the thing that came out very strongly in the submissions was I wouldn't call it opposition to the bills, but the serious concern raised by the submissions. These relate to what they referred to as the public interest defense. I'm not a lawyer, Chairperson, and I would appeal to either you or Mr. Swan to perhaps elaborate on what that means. I have an idea of what it means,
that's the first point.
Okay. The second one, which was highlighted by the oral submissions, was the power the bill gives to even officials at a very lower level to restrict mundane information from being made available. We're not talking about the kind of information that those of us who serve under JFDI deal with. Just mundane information. And therefore there's this potential for abuse, which we should be very mindful of. Thirdly, the concern was raised with regard to the adjudication of disputes. Few of them actually presented us with alternatives. The most glaring alternative, of course, was the creation of an ombudsman or an ombudsperson or an information commissioner. Countries and democracies, particularly Australia, which the Justice Portfolio Committee was when it was considered higher as a goal. This idea was and so some of them put forward the idea that there should be an independent review mechanism. The next area of concern is the possible clash of the bill with an existing Act of Parliament. And I'm not referring to PIA, but rather to the Protected Disclosures Act. The Protected Disclosures Act is supposed to protect whistleblowers. Well, it's not doing that right now as we speak, simply because State Department and senior officials are abusing the legislation. So it has to be looked at a different level. But the concern here is how this building interfaces with the Protected Disclosures Act. And lastly, the role of the minister in the entire process should be seriously looked at, and so it is proposed by the submissions that someone other than the minister should handle the appeal. Chairperson, those are just some of the issues I think the most important. There's others too, like the capacity of our national archives that I'm only just now looking at. But I'm sure that other members may choose to highlight other aspects of the Irish submissions of the government.
Can I add just, I think, is it, can I have you on this one?
Me too. Just thank you all. Carol, just be adding on to what you said on this. You did mention some serious concerns. I took note of these things, so maybe I'll go a bit chronological, but I don't know. One thing that is clear that is there were some concerns about the application of the law to be act in terms of all organs of state. How wide that could be. And I think at some stage we need to discuss that. I'm not going to have a discussion about it. So the wide application of the Act. And in line with that, of course, is very much the situation with Section 8 in terms of the national interest of the Republic versus national security.
Mm-hmm.
And that brought in the commercial information and personal information instead of just those things that we normally call intelligence or other security information. So first of all, the broadness of the national interest of the Republic. Chair, then the other thing that was mentioned as far as I'm concerned was the low threshold of the classification itself, the thresholds on the various levels, confidential, secret and top secret. At the moment it also just may be on. There's some concern about the low threshold. There's a lot of remarks, and I think that's almost lastly from my side. There's a lot of remarks about the way the bill deals with information before the courts. And I tried my best, and I I couldn't really get to the gist about what was bothering everybody, and then quite a number of concerns came because of the protected information in courts. But in any case, let me just say, there were quite a number of people addressed us that were very concerned about Chapter 12 of the bill,
although they weren't very clear.
No, I think it's my lack of attention.
No, they weren't.
Of course, I was looking for specific problems. I'm not talking about changing the wordings or something. Major problems. But in any case, that was mentioned. There was remarks about the maximum time periods for classification. And in line with that, the whole argument about the declassification and the... And I think there we got some good remarks in terms of the fact that the qualifications or the criteria for reclassification is more stringent than for classification itself, and that's all part of this low threshold thing. I think we'll argue that as we go along with that. Chair, there were some remarks about the responsibilities of the agency being NIA. Personally, I'm of the opinion that if you just read the bill, you won't properly understand without other information, the interaction of NIA in terms of MIS and vetting and those sort of things. So I think we just need to discuss if this responsibility of the agency to ensure certain things in terms of implementation monitoring of the bill, if it is set out in such a way in the bill to become eventually the act that it will be clear to the public at large about the limited part of NIA to play, if we indeed would give them that part to play. I mean, that's also part of the discussion. I think that's more a matter of, I'll venture to say, lack of proper understanding of what was the intentions. It may well be that the bill itself agreed in a way to cause that misunderstanding or lack of proper understanding, and maybe our briefings on the bills made it a bit easier for us, or our background in terms of various other roles we play or hats we have. I jumped around, and I'm just concerned I may have missed something, but I think that's more or less the more serious things. Now, of course, some of these are major policy things, so I think as we go on today, you must just bear in mind that maybe when you talk about the scope of the whole idea of national interest and those things, I don't know if you're going to limit our interaction tomorrow from the minister to just the other two bills, or we will be able to just flag maybe some of these things that we may regard as policy things as well before we as a committee really get into taking decisions as to the scope of application on the national interest and those things. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Advocate Swart.
Okay, thank you very much. My sense was that we had some very valuable input from different people. The key point is what you had raised earlier, that not a single dissenter felt that there was no need to vote. I think everybody accepts that in a democracy, there is a need for some approval, some state information to be identified. That's a very fundamental point, because that didn't come through even in the media reports and those kinds of things. It might be the obvious thing, but I think it's important to put that on the record that there is a need. Now, the debate or differences might emerge around the following question. First of all, if we agree that certain information must be classified in a democracy, what is the information? What information must be classified and should be allowed to be classified? As I understood, a number of presenters felt that by simply referring to organs of state, it covers every government department, federal, state, local authority, etc. And that 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 might be too wide. If everyone is given, but they were implying unfettered right to get it, then that might become too wide and too problematic. And then we come to this same thing about some bus company, something like that, defining a bus route. It should be for public money, otherwise you can't take the bus. So, so that's the theory. What must be said? I think we need to be clear in our mind. Then who should play it? I think that in clearly in security related departments, if we say senior management crime, but if we begin to drop the scale of it too much, then it might be any junior official that starts that signing documents without due appreciation about the need for public access. Also in the question of who is the role of the minister, there was a view that too much is the specialist, even though too much is the minister to be general. I think we think how we can begin to say certain problems and not others, and exempt certain problems. I think that is the next issue, is who and the other. Then there's the issue as to how long do you get it. And I think a few people tell that maybe 3 years might be too long or too short, or whatever the case might be. There's some issue of when do you get it. And do you declare that you have testified something? Because part of the security is sometimes to deny that you have testified something. What should call it? So that is an area that I think we're going to have to try and work around. It's not open to abuse. It's less interesting of the stopping. Am I being investigated? We can't confirm or deny that you are being investigated. So you don't know where you stand. So you just keep denying, you say, we don't know, we'll see. But I think that issue needs to be resolved. So those, I think, are the key, the underpinnings of this. But then if we can get say consensus among the parties on those things, I think it will help us to work. Then on a conceptual level, I thought that the issue of national interest versus national security, I thought most people say the concept of national interest is too wide. Open this thing up to almost everything, and that what we should really be looking at more carefully is specifying national security. Am I going to include there that we might want to include foreign policy, because I think maybe we also border on that. And there's been this debate about economic interest, how, of course, certain economic information should be classified, but how far and how wide. And can officials use certification to prevent exposure of mismanagement or wrongdoing or such? So I think that issue we would need quite a bit of clarity in that point. Point has been made earlier about it, an appeals mechanism or an information officer. I just want to throw in that we must perhaps, instead of trying to create another mechanism, we do have an Inspector General of Intelligence. I'm just throwing this out. What role can the Inspector General play in just trying to create a new office, etc. We have an independent Inspector General. That's really where the disputes and the appeals might want to go. They are complaints. So I want us to consider that there might well be an established mechanism in place that is going to broaden the power of the law. Then there has been this issue of if a member of the public or a journalist finds himself or herself in possession of a classified document. A member of the public might be away. Since I don't understand this, here I don't see any value.
Put it on the smoothest.
Or put it on in a pizza box. And leave it before the court or something. Yes. But I don't know. So, they might go to the police station and give it to the police as they are supposed to do that. But a journalist might see real value. And he or she might say that this is a public interest we need to reveal. It might be a public interest, but it might also be used to the newspaper. And they're running an exclusive story and protecting the public information. and they might want to run that story, which could threaten national security. Now, how do you determine something like that in security interest when the journalists they say it's a public story? That's what was the hub of that idea. How we constrain journalists and their right to report freely, to inform the public, etc. And of course, there are penalties that are associated with that, which I think are worrisome. How we're going to work around that one, I'm not clear on the but I think that's an area that we will have to look at much, much more carefully. My own feeling also is that we might want to strengthen the preamble. Some of the things that are there, which are not fundamental principles, like the intrinsic value, etc., we might want to move those things to the preamble to set out, you know, what needs to be taken in a context, to set out the context within which this body is being and must be understood. Because I think that the principles are clearer there, kind of number the second of them, but they clear the principles. It seems like intrinsic value, etc., might want to go into the preamble, we might want to strengthen the preamble, because I think it's very standard at the moment. Other bills which deal with this kind of thing, we see a really strong preamble, which signifies the intent of lawmakers. You might want to look at that.
Anything from you at the moment?
Yeah. But you can take it separate from the issue of the time frame. Are we forcing ourselves so much because of 2009? We were time frame that this bill, all this action, got to be finished before 2009. Because if yes, then we're making a mistake. Making a serious mistake. Because when people saying there's no time, there's no time. The lesson I learned when I was serving on Africa peer review led by Badun, our new team of good government, we went to different provinces that have indicated that we should have. And the information that we gathered, we will not gather that information to have called some to come to Parliament. But each province that reported us to come, they organized themselves according to what was the content of Africa peer review. What a honorable bank is raising, and actually most people even last week. There are issues that are coming not only to advocates, but more than two advocates, and those advocates are very important. They can send the ex-provinces, they can really, really respond, because they haven't responded. But if we are rushing for 2009, then that's what we won't be to be able to. Even after 2009, the masses will send capable people, not put us on the parliament at all. We will send capable people who can continue on with spending. So now I just need clarity, not from this house, clarity from parliament. Why are we rushing this thing so much? Are we forced to say it before election should be finished with this? Because maybe there will be no capable people after 2009. Because if that's the case, we are hoping ourselves at all times. The last issue, in the previous I saw that society is a beautiful people. Said they want to submit and they never came. ANC said they want to submit and they never came. Yes, I heard you saying it's got so many affiliates, they can't say they have to commit themselves in the registration and in what the country is doing. They can't be talking about that. Because I, for one, is as a member of the council, because I'll begin to say, oh, only few people are regarded as intelligent consultants. Consultants have got so many affiliates, and those affiliates are led by capable men and women who don't sit in many of these areas where they can say that. In short, I'm trying to say, can we be given real clear indication of why is such a rush? And why people say they will come and they don't come? In particular, I quoted two. There is because we underestimate the power of others. It's only those who get over. That's why I'm saying you can answer this one, you can take this one when you have taken the other to leave, or we can put it in parallel. Because now I'm not sure. Why should I read all these things overnight and following night and with the woman's mouth and the professor's work? What is the pushing issue?
The time frames for Bill and the fact that we have agreed, and I think there is an understanding that there needs to be a wider response and a further interaction with the public out there. But I think it's for the committee to take that process to Parliament. I don't think you are saying that we are rushing. Perhaps I think you're warning us that we shouldn't rush. and if that is what you're saying, and I think you are correct, but I think we are very wide awake for that. I don't think there's anybody. Honorable Bloom said it, Vardia said it. We are all very, very aware of the fact that this is not something we should rush. And that is not, I think, what we intend to do here. Not to rush this thing. But we have a responsibility because the bills have landed in this committee. Parliament saw fit to appoint the ad hoc committee. And we have a responsibility to process the bill and to advise Parliament how far we're getting. And I think within what you are saying and what the members are raising and what other concerns have come, we will report to Parliament how far we are. You understand? But you are correct. It's going to be our duty to tell Parliament precisely what are the problems that we are having and what that time frame we might need. but you know, the media is always around here, and one does not want to, in a committee meeting, start talking as if, you know, we are working towards a dead end. And that you get all this negative publicity about, oh, the committee is just going through the process of that. I don't think is what we're doing. We are doing our work. We want to do the work responsibly. And we are noting that the time that was allocated for us, it's just not enough. And we are, but that's not going to be the determining factor as to now that we must rush. And so your point, I think, is well taken. But it's a point we will have to take up with Parliament. And as we go along, see where we get. I don't think at this stage we must be saying the process is totally useless. We don't have enough time, and you know, there's elections. I think in the next few weeks, Honourable Gabatelli, we would have much clarity on where we're going to go. So I think if you're just patient on that, and let me assure you, there's no attempt here to rush. No attempt whatsoever that one day you'll find that this thing has just slipped through while you were at your women's parliament. You know, you will not. Now, I'm just saying that you won't find that this process has left you behind. You know, because it's not that process. We are not running downhill here. So be assured about that. Regarding the other submissions, you know where they are, and you know what have they really got in mind. I think once we interacted with Parliament in terms of where we are in the process, I think we would then look at what the committee is going to do in terms of what you are saying, not underestimating the power of the people out there, how do we interact with them. It's a process we're going to have to look at. I think we need to first put our work in context with Parliament's program to see whether and how we will affect the process. But I think by next week, after we deal with the minister tomorrow, by next week, I think we'll have a clear indication of where and how this process is going to take. So I think just be patient and be assured This is not a process that's running downhill that you will miss the one day when you come to a meeting, find out this thing is done. That's not that process. I don't know.
Thank you. Yeah. Now, I think we as a committee, in a broad sense, all of us made it very clear at this stage that we will not be rushed with this by Parliament. And I'm quite sure the media already took note of that. And what you all said is indeed true. This is a very difficult piece of legislation. We will deal with it in a proper manner befit we as legislators have to do with it. And there's no rational thing. If we don't manage, then we will come after us and take over. But I think that's true. So there's just two things I may left out, but in any case. Mr. Vardy mentioned the intrinsic, it's terrible, intrinsic value approach. Thank you so very much, because it's quite clear to us that the people who visited us and gave us the inputs are also not clear as to what this is. I've got some idea what was intended by it to be. In other words, a specific objective evaluation of that specific piece of information that may be classified. But I think the concern is more, apart from the proper understanding what is intended to achieve, the concern is also the big question, if the way it's stated there, is it indeed an objective way of looking at this? All the time, let me just say this, all the time as I read through these with our background and as I listen to the public, there's one very important thing that we, particularly us on the side, need to bear in mind. We understand a lot of these things in terms of fact of transparency, and we get information clear as to some of these things. The biggest concern out there for the public, and be it the media, be it the people from the far off constituencies, be it whoever, is that we not give something to the state to use to hide certain information away from the public. Be it wrong stuff in terms of corruption or those things, but also be it denying the public their right to get things. And of course, from the public's point of view, they see one thing, they see this possible veil of secrecy hanging there, and they don't know where it's going to come down. And that's what we need to do. We need to give them assurances that as far as is possible, because it will never be totally possible, but as far as possible, we need to give them, through this visualization, the assurance that we put sufficient safeguards and thresholds and other things in place that we will, as far as possible, prevent those problems. But to do that, this intrinsic value thing needs to be looked at again. Jim, then just the other thing, it's not a small thing, but it's not a big part of the law, is this whole thing of items, files, integral file blocks, file series, and categories of that information. There's also concern about, and that is section 19.2, the fact that now a whole, they call it files, file blocks, categories can be classified. So I think we also need to look at that. I think that's a very valid thing. So yeah, when Oliver Lander has made some remarks about this public interest remarks or defense, and that's something that we really need to discuss at some stage properly. Are we reading it that what we heard from the presenter, from the public, is that is a need for a defense which would prevent anybody from publishing classified information not being prosecuted because of a defense of public, it is in the public interest. And of course, in practical terms, that would mean that a journalist, for instance, let me use journalist as the example because it's probably in other words, a journalist would get hold of a piece of information that's classified, but probably should not have been classified because it would be to prevent embarrassment or to hide corruption or whatever the case may be. Let's talk about the honest exposure in the public interest of a classified thing that hasn't been classified. In other words, a journalist would get that information, would publish it. Now, as a police at the moment, all that the police now need to do is to go fetch him, lock him up, and put him away until eventually the court will come in 18 months, and then he will start to have to try and defend and try to explain and do these things. While a public interest offence would probably put the burden of proof on the state, if they wish to prosecute him, to prove that indeed it is not in the public interest for those, for that. In other words, it's a change of the burden of proof. I think we need to have a proper discussion as to, because there need to be some caveat in that regard. I'm quite sure we all agree with that. But I think we'll have, need to have a proper discussion about that, Chair, and I don't want to go into, I'm going to stop there, just for the purposes of some earlier remarks. Just wanted to state the way I see it, possibly the way it came from the hearings.
I'll get to you now a little on this. The question of public interest and the media has been a very interesting development in South African law, and came about in defamation cases. The normal defamation case where you call your friend or your neighbor a thief, and all sorts of bad things, and he's not happy with you saying these things about him, he takes you to court. One of the things you need to show in court is the fact that what you said was in fact the truth of your, you know, if you don't get past the truth, you are in trouble. But with an ordinary person in the street, it does not necessarily mean that if what you say about the person is the truth, that you are entitled to say it. So it's still a question of whether you have a right to say what you said about the person. As I said, you fail if you don't show the truth, but you also have to show that there was a necessity for you to disclose that. So you could, for example, say that your neighbor was a thief, and it might well be that it was necessary to point out to the public around that he was a thief. And so it was a fact. You have to show that he was in fact a thief, that he was being found guilty, and that also there was a necessity to disclose to the surrounding people. But when it came to the media, quite interestingly enough, the media could say something about the politician or the doctor or some important person, and the truth was not necessarily of major consideration. If it was in the public interest that you say these bad things about the person, you would be able to get away with raising that as a defense. But it was in the public interest that these things be disclosed. Now naturally, when you get this information, you just disclose it. You don't, as a media, check whether your sources, there's no serious obligation on, they have their code of conduct as to how they check whether the information is correct or not. But they then disclose it. So if the document came to the hands of the media and they then disclosed it, the question would not be whether the content of the document was true or not and was now harmful to the person that it was referring to. They would merely raise the fact that it was in the public interest that this document be disclosed, and that would be a sufficient defense. And I think that is what was worrying a lot of people that was presenting, that they wanted that defense. And it was at that time that I said, so you're looking for a second round of appeal. Because remember, if a document was classified, there would be an appeal process if you were unhappy with the classification. And eventually, if you lost your appeal there, where it landed up with the minister, the document, that's in the end of the document. But if the document then leaked out into the public sphere, and it was a classified document, and you disclosed it, if you landed up in court now, you would raise the public interest. This is what they were saying. They would like to raise the public interest as a defense, that it was now in the public interest. And what I'd raise then is that, just as to get clarity, are you now saying that You could bypass or, you know, that process now. The minister has now agreed that this document needs to be classified. But the document now having landed up in your hands by whatever means, being a classified document, you'd still then be able to go to court and, you know, after disclosing. And the court would then have to sit on this, and there would be a second appeal procedure. Now, I don't know if they understood what the question was, because obviously it would be something that we need to look at. You know, because what would be the what would be the purpose of having an authority assess a classification process, whether it was okay or not, and later on saying, but you know, it doesn't matter if you land up with a document, you could still go to court after you've disclosed it and let the court decide. You might as well take away the appeal procedure and let the court decide on the fine. Yeah, but that was the thing I was trying to get clarity from, so I don't know if it helps the Honourable Honest on that question or not. It's a defence which they like to raise, and
yeah.
when
no,
they...
No, I don't have a problem with it. Hopefully what I'm going to say now will clarify why I raised that as a concern from their perspective. There are two cases in the public domain right now. One is sub judice, which I referred to very briefly and sharply. One involving the business day. Sub judice, and so I can't go into the details. But it's sufficiently serious and pertinent to the bill. Ironic. It just happened that way. But as this bill hit our table here in Parliament, that case involved in the business day landed in court. The other one is the one that hit the media over the weekend, where a now deceased member of NIA conducted an investigation which is now a source of much controversy and may well find its way again to court. So here you are. These are not, these non-law dealing with the case of the husband in Kukunau that wants to classify its schedule as top secret. This is now involved in very, very pertinent matters that we should apply our minds to. And of course there would be those that will argue that, well, the arms dealing is a matter of public interest. Okay. And whether Thabo Mbeki as president met with Man Ferostar, there will be those who say, no, of course it's in public interest. There may well be those people up in the presidency and in the state who will say, no, it isn't. I don't know. I think we need to accept, Chiefs, that however the final draft of this bill is presented to President Trump's assent, let's accept that there will always be this tension, this healthy tension, between the media, and in brackets, you can put the public with a question mark, and I want to say the intelligence services, not the state. Because when you say the state, you immediately also include the lower level officials who will want to hide their incompetence, their maladministration, corruption, which is what we need to be mindful of. So this tension between the media and the intelligence services is a good thing. It's a healthy tension. It will always be there. I don't think you'll ever get rid of it. There's no media house that's going to be happy. They want every aspect of the information the intelligence services have made available to them. And on the other hand, the intelligence services are going to say, no, you're not intelligence, unfortunately. So there we have it. I think the important thing to also bear in mind is that
we will also always have the roles of court. The role of court will always be. It's set out clearly defined in the Constitution. We can't run away from it. It's a good thing. We can put in place that appeal mechanism, but let's run away from this idea that that must be the final officer. And they tried to introduce it. And I was really disappointed in them trying to say, let the appeal mechanism, this ombudsman or this information officer be a final arbiter. I didn't hear so much, maybe I'm going to introduce this. I think, Chairperson, the other thing that you also need to bear in mind is that you will always have a situation where, and you as a lawyer, as well as Mr. Swart, will understand this concept, where the horses bolt. And the media will always take advantage of it. They will say, well, if we print, all right, they'll take us to court. All right, we'll pay the penalty. And even go to jail. You know, it happened before. Mm. The important thing is that the information is out there. And on the side of the intelligence service, they said, but this thing was crucial to be kept secret. So you will have those situations as well, where this appeal mechanism, the minister, and even the courts just will say, well, what do we do now? It's out there, it's printed. Unless the media house courteous enough to phone you, Mr. Burgess, and say, this is what we intend printing, which is they do it very seldom, by the way, because they know you're going to object. And if they don't accept your objection, then you'll run to court and get an adjudicated. But that's the seldom happens. The other aspect which we will need to make note of, Chair, is whether we want to. I think we should change the authority given to the minister, not just the appeal mechanism, but it's his authority to make regulations, or much better, to say when he makes the regulation that one, it must be tabled in Parliament, or tabled before the JSCI, and the JSCI must approve the regulation. I think that will take away a lot of your concern. Well, there may still be concern about the media, but this JSCI meets in secret behind closed doors, and they won't know what it's doing, and stuff like that. Well, that's tough. Senate Intelligence Committee meets behind closed doors. The British Oversight Committee meets behind closed doors. So it's nothing unique to South Africa. It happens all over the world. I take the point, and I agree with Mr. Bassett, that instead of creating a new bureaucracy to deal with the appeal, let's look at properly utilizing the Office of Inspector General. We can fulfill that role, in my view, very effectively. I just thought I should make those additional points, because we've gone beyond dealing with just the Office of Missions Chairs. There are one or two other things that I'll raise them when we get to those.
Honourable members, Mr. Benger, Honourable Benger, be quiet, say something to say there. Honourable members, the thing I raised earlier was the language question. There was a concern from some of the presenters, at least one that I recall, that was raising this question that Parliament seems to be determined to write laws that the public out there cannot understand. And there was this concern about the language. It takes us back to this whole intrinsic value. It's a very philosophical term. I've known Karl Marx and other such philosophers to use this thing. Very complicated terms to understand or concepts to understand. When I saw this in the bill myself, I thought of taking out my philosophy books again and just checking it.
That
I get myself to understand what has been said here before checking whether what has been said is in fact correct. And I think that's one of the things that I picked up was this concern about the language. I might just add, I've studied philosophy and I've seen this concept being used very widely by philosophers. And even with my knowledge, I had to go and recheck what was being said here. And I think it would be very, very, very irresponsible if we are going to start passing legislation. I'm not saying this is something that should not be taken into account. But when you get to legislation that is saying things like this, then I think we must be careful. Be careful because we ourselves don't know what we are saying here.
Sure.
And I can tell you, I've done a whole lot of research on these things since. So I'm just in agreement with one of the concerns that was raised about the language of the bill. And I see particularly in this clause 8, this very, very strange and we might have to revisit this thing and just see what is really the issue here, you know. Because I can assure you that your public officials are going to have great, great difficulty coming to terms with what they need to do or understand by this clause 8. And it is something I think we need to look at. So that's one thing. That the other thing that I picked up, which I don't hear you saying, is also the PIA Act and the relationship that this bill has with the PIA Act. I think from what was being said that there seems to be a serious necessity for us as a committee, you know, to have a look at the PIA Act now. Probably it was never intended that we look at this thing, but we're going to have to look at because of these cross references and the fact that in the PIA Act there are all these exceptions which the officers can use to refuse you information. And we just need to have a look at the Act and see how it relates to what the work that we're doing here. I don't think we can pass that process, and a lot of the presenters have also raised this. You will recall I asked one of the presenters whether they thought that the PIA Act needs to be looked at again, and the answer was yes, particularly because of the implementation problems that they're getting. And I'm sure the Honourable Kada Asmal had a look at that when he sat on his ad hoc committee dealing with the Chapter 9 institutions. Perhaps we should get a copy of that report. We should get a copy of that report and just see what was said there in terms of language and in terms of implementation. Because I think as we process this bill, there is going to be a need for us possibly to look at amending the Information Act. It's just an insight that I get. I just think from what some of the people were saying, it's something we need to look at. The whole question of the public interest, national security, national interest, again language. Again language, again very complicated concepts. It is actually quite interesting that the legislatures were that brave to try and define these concepts in the definition clause, because it's concepts which worldwide jurisdictions have been struggling with. So I don't want to get into the definitions, the meanings. You have raised it, honourable members, that is particularly an area which we need to give some consideration. These not public interest just as a defence in where the offences have been created, but public interest in that many of these presenters are saying that instead of using national interest, you should be using public interest, because public interest includes the concept of national interest. So there's no need for you to use the word or the concept national interest. Everywhere where national interest include public interest, and that should cover them. I don't want to comment on that, but it merely raises the importance of dealing with these concepts. So and is there any other? I see the Honourable Landis wants to make a point of him. I'll get to you now, Honourable Landis. I think the other point about that we as legislatures have come to understand in the short 14 years that we have been busy with legislation here at Parliament is that one must be very careful in creating new structures. Becomes very problematic in the end. It's very nice in the legislation to say that this one will do that and let's create this new body, but we know it becomes very problematic when one implements these things. So I think that's also another very important point which was made, and I agree that it's something we need to look at, this thing of the IG looking at that, at appeals, the question of the minister I think is also a good point raised. These regulations, we know there is already that one problem which we identified, and we'll get some clarity from the minister tomorrow on that particular point. But let me take your concern, Mr.
Chair. It's in relation to the issue you raised about the interface between the school and I. You're quite correct when you say we have the authority to amend. That is correct. But I would urge us not to go that route, but instead to look at drafting a report which is then tabled in Parliament emanating from this committee. And when Parliament adopts such a report, that report will go to the Justice Ministry. And obviously, amongst other things, that report will say that we believe that higher should be amended. Of course, we would not need to just engage the drafters in the ministry to ascertain whether in their drafting of this bill they looked at fines. And if they didn't, then why not? I would imagine that we've reached a stage now where an assessment of the effectiveness of fire is a probably that also emanates from Professor Asmar's report. But it also emanates from reports received by the Justice of the Police Committee from the Human Rights Commission, which has a specialized desk dealing with fire. And they've been raising all sorts of concerns for the last 4 or 5 years. no doubt that the justice industry is fully aware of this. But I think if we go that route, Chairperson, we'd be a lot more effective. Thank
you. We have the state law advisor here. I thought it might just be appropriate to hear whether she has any input on the discussions that took place here. If there's anything, madam, you want to add, or I don't know if you were at the public hearings.
I had to attend to other committees.
But you heard the discussion here. We're not looking to debate any of the issues in great depth. Is there perhaps anything you want to draw the committee's attention to and what was discussed here now?
Yes, and to sort of add to what the member has mentioned with regard to the amendment of power. So, because it is not within the jurisdiction of the Minister of Intelligence, so it would be proper, the route that you also recommend to so, a recommendation could be to the Minister of Justice regarding the problem that the concern in the children that may be identified in the regard to the bill that affects the prior. So then those two ministers can also debate on that. You think it's the recommendation? Again, also the concern about that the Minister of Intelligence is the one who is sitting for the appeal. I don't think the bill states that. The bill says that the Minister concerned within those organs of state that must sit for the appeal, not the Minister of Intelligence. Yes, the correction that I also want to put forward the comments.
Is that all?
So far, yes, that I can say for now, because most of the things are more open. Policy, then we have to, the department have to consider at least how far do they accommodate the submission.
The provisions of Clause 8, this intrinsic value approach, by way of clarity, is there any other approach? I would imagine that there would be a non-intrinsic value approach as opposed to
objective justification.
Yeah, you know, this seems to be something that the is existentialists have invented. Can you just take us through very briefly some of the understanding here or any other approach?
The terminology that is the committee may be rightly to say it can be sort of reconsidered. But we also have to give a sort of accommodate the terminology that is used to try and capture the meaning and the intention of the drafter. I'm not saying that the consent cannot be taken into consideration of the language that must be used, but each and every field has got its own terminology at some point, and which it makes it difficult to bring across the intention of the drafter. So the drafter may feel
for the doctor to be understood the rationale behind he can present in the terminology used within that field. So we also know even the scientists, when they legislate, they use their terms only in understood by the people in that area. So even in law sometimes, and the drafters use those terms that are sort of understood in that field. But it doesn't mean that we cannot find a term that can be understood clear, because that is the intention in National Conservative Party, to make legislation accessible without the people being assisted by the lawyer to understand the legislation.
I myself am a big believer in interesting by that approach, because you can justify using the fact. So I wonder, would it be possible for us to ask our esteemed state law advisor here to try and draft an amendment of Section 8 without using the wording intrinsic value approach? Let's just see what is meant by what they want here. Now, I understand it. I'm not a philosopher. I'm not a qualified philosopher like you, but I call myself a layman. But I understand. But I mean, I can't even. I have some understanding of this. I can't even start explaining to somebody else. That's the problem. I wanted you to be bad for us to ask a redraft of a redraft of Section 8 without using this specific scientific word, without saying intrinsic value approach. See, in terms of Cinnamon's. What we're trying to do here, what we're trying to say, how we want to explain terms that would stand up in court but would also be acceptable to the layman or the normal person out there without legal background or scientific background. So standing up in court, proper interpretation, but also understanding of what we mean, how what we actually mean in terms of this objective approach to look at what is in that document itself to justify why we want to classify it or to keep it. I mean, so it isn't just about classification, it's about safeguarding. It's possible to choose. Maybe a few fun exercise, but.
The Honourable London?
Chair, I think we're probably already in agreement that concepts such as this shouldn't find their way into this. Pretty soon we're going to be having those arguments of what the meaning of life is. And instead of having lawyers like yourself and Mr. Swart, you know, we'll be calling in great philosophers. Not a character. I accept that the drafters simply take the instructions and put that down as we have it here. To respond to, just to express to this state of the world, I think we've reached the point where if we want to change it, we should be specific. Right now, we've identified this problem as being problematic. I'm not sure that we've clearly identified what the law should actually say. Given it just a brief thought, in my mind I said, well, should the question not be as it's stated there, but rather in the negative, what approach should be taken to determine what state information should not be protected from disclosure of destruction? Just in the opposite. And then immediately you do away with that heading in terms of the approach. What heading do you then put there? I don't know. But, Che,
it wasn't clear that this whole clause or section needs careful by all of us, not just the state government, by all of us, we need to be very careful about it. And go through the fines with the home and decide what we can leave there and what we should take out. I don't have any solutions right now.
Honorable members, the Mungabadal.
You know, when they were presenting, when the presenter was presented in the people of protection of information, there were indications from some of the press groups. And of course, the interesting relationship between the for it to continue being interesting, our request humble to check in this section where can they be, because in any country we are moving forward, you will need to take care of it. That CNS ministry, some of them are saying they are washed up of the people. That thing alone can put some people in a serious problem, because there is no specification anywhere that says I'm a washed-up veteran from that boundary to that boundary, which includes now the issues which are presented by NCCC. When does the washed-up report back to the owner of that property? And, you know, really, I'm very curious. Well, this time we like it. Yes, it's very committed. How much are you getting paid to pay the workshop? In terms of reporting back, how do you protect whatever has been handled for your own? How do you protect the things or being seen by the public or the actual debt? We say some of these things technology very abundantly, and now we're dealing with protection of information. Because while they are washed up, there has to be some level of growth that will have to come up with. Has any country for the responsibility, particularly a country of media, of really educating whatsoever you think will fall under the regular changing? I have that, not for the first time, because the public usually takes defense to court many times, and the section, most of them, they will say, I was doing it for the interest of the public. So we don't know how many members of the public are benefiting. When they contacted that I was doing it for their interest, and when that interest expired, for all those things, you can really find the stage where our press can do their own thing, because we don't want them to be like us. Let them also not expose what the writers have to people and to suppliers that they have not.
Thank you, I think this is a very important point that the Honourable Member is raising now. Because I did subtly during the presentation ask one of the presenters, I think it was the lawyer of Arusa, who really are the watchdogs of the public interest? Who are the watchdogs of national interest and national security? And I think this is what the Honourable Mungabadeli is now raising, you know. Is this the word I use was not watchdog, I use the word custodian. How does it come that certain people present themselves as the custodians of the public interest? And is that representation properly done? Are they really serving the interests of the public? Because, for example, it might well have been in the interest of a certain section of the population of the public that the consolidated browse mode be disclosed. But it might well have been in another section of the population totally unacceptable that the document was disclosed based on the content. And I use it merely because it's a document which people know of. One would say that certain people that was happy that what was in the document was damaging enough to certain people, individuals or organizations. But I suppose the other people might have felt very hurt and disturbed by the fact. But if you look at the manner in which the document was disclosed, the disclosures might say, but it was in the public interest. And I think I'm not making any findings, I'm just trying to analyze what the Honourable Member is saying.
Mm.
And I think this is in fact correct, that we need to understand that relationship. Because while we accept that there were strong representations on there, a number of issues, Barry Gilder did bring a different perspective to the hearings, and it's a pity it was towards the end. But I mean, one of the important things that he says now, it might not be a perfect bill, but what he does say is that the bill is not targeting the public here. The bill is not intending to do the public any harm. It's not meant to take any of the public rights away. What the bill is trying to do is just protect the government, protect the state from its enemies, whoever they might be. And I think it was when he elaborated on some of the experience that we have had, the fact that we do not have espionage as a crime in the country, it's unthought of in today's world. That South Africa today does not have a crime of espionage. And you go into any other country, it's one of the major crimes that country uses to protect its national interests and all sorts of other interests. We today don't have such a crime. Now, whatever espionage might mean and whatever the definition might mean, I think in an international circle it's well understood. You know, it's messing around with the country's documents and its information and its officials and doing nasty things that harms the country. And people do it. Enemies of the state do it for various reasons. People do it because there's large sums of money involved there. People do it because they want to harm the country. People do it because they're employed to do it. So, I think, I don't want to go into Mr. Gilder's presentation, but it was that part of his presentation that I thought I found particularly interesting. That it was not, that he drew attention to the fact that the bill was not looking at doing the public any harm. And it's always the case that when you legislate when you bring in legislation, that somehow or another it has an effect. That it would affect the people in certain extent. And one can then understand that is why one had the various concerns from the various organizations. But I think the perspective, seeing where he was coming from, but looking at the unintended or the bad consequences or good consequences of the bill, the fact that he was seen it through different eyes is what I'm trying to raise in respect of what the Honourable Gabadelli is saying, that there are people that are looking at this bill with different eyes. And it's in that context that I say that we should be hearing them, because a lot of these things that have been said have been said by people that have looked at it in a certain way, and we need to hear those people that is also looking at it in another way. And I'm sure those of us that understand Ms. the minimum information security standards and what it was intended for. I'm sure that there is nobody that understands this listing that could say that it just hasn't worked. It just hasn't worked. And we as a JSCI have walked around in numerous institutions, including Parliament, and just found that simple security of your PC, your computer, is just not appropriate. Now, it's not about whether you are looking at pornographic information and whether the media should have a right to know where the MPs are looking at. It's just simple. If the legislation was intended that you as a public official should do that protection, then that's what needs to be done. I cannot now start arguing that, but now you're hiding things. Because what the myth was meant is just to bring in a minimum standard that would be used in state institutions to protect information and to protect the integrity of the state. And it just hasn't worked. And I think it is in that context that nobody had a problem with the legislation as such, that it was a necessity for this. But I think if we look at the way the Barry Gelder came over, you see, because he was now actually drawing attention to some of the more important things that have been responsible for the inspiration behind the legislation, so that one could understand what's going on. Because it would be interesting now for somebody that has an interest in the bill just to look at the bill and not know the history. But I think Barry Gilder put some history behind it that we really understood why this necessity, the old protection bill, the old protection act, old and talking about military stuff, you know, you can just, it takes you back so far you start to become disturbed about this whole thing. Because you start reading all those things that used to irritate you and haunt you. And I am actually quite surprised that this thing has survived. You know, one would have thought that they would repeal this thing, you know. How it survived that this thing was not repealed amongst some of those early legislations, I don't know. But the time is must be surely overdue. I don't think there's anybody that can agree that act must go. Honourable members, I think we have tea for a few minutes, and we come back and wrap up.
Yeah.
Okay.
What do you still need to do?
No, I'm sorry, can we just wrap up for a few minutes? So have some tea?
I just want to get an idea of the length
of wrapping
up. Just hold on, please.
I just wanted to get a clarity about the instructions that I just...
Okay, we're going to wrap up. Okay. We'll come back after tea and wrap up, but I don't think there can be any harm. Okay, we don't want to do it as a process that we're doing this thing, you know, clause by clause. But it would be interesting, even if you just presented to me, to have a look at it and see, you know.
I just wanted to know if it is the term intrinsic value that
say.
Yes.
You understand section. You know what the draft is, and through then what the state wants to put in place. Now, what I'm talking about isn't an official amendment of the bill to move forward with. I just talk about a drafting exercise. And that's why I asked, Chair, if we can request you to look at Section 8 and redraft it as an informal document for our purposes without using the words intrinsic value approach. And say in other words, what is meant there? What we want to get from that section?
You see. Also, if you look at 2A, there's an intrinsic value approach, and then A says demands a reason and a rational approach. Now, I would have thought reason, you know, in certain contexts, and rational have the same meaning. So I don't know if in this context, reason demands a reasoned and a rational approach. It's two separate things. Because I think if you act rationally, you would be acting reasonably. So it is a whole range of words, you know, assessment of reasonably foreseeable consequences, you know, dangerous terms, these are reasonably foreseeable consequences. Because, you know, how far does it have to be ahead of you before it becomes foreseeable? You know, is it out of range now? How close must you bring it so that you can actually see it, that you can classify it as foreseeable? So, you know, now when we have this problem, you can understand when people start implementing this thing. And they need to now decide whether, you know, this thing needs to be protected or not. Or whether, you know, from destruction or loss. I can just see your officials having major problems saying, no, this is...
Chair, floors like this we've always described as designed to make a lot of work for lawyers.
Yeah. Well, the other alternative, Chair, is to get an argument that we can take this whole clause out of the law without making a real difference to the rest in terms of what's...
Yeah, but I think the more important question was, listen, you know, what was intended?
Yeah, no,
what do you want? Because if we get some clear indication there,
yeah,
it might be that this becomes a regulation, or it might become something else, you see. It might just be a one-liner. That, and then the rest becomes a discretion somewhere, or it becomes a regulation, which one can get later. I don't know. But I think we need to understand first a little bit more about what is being said here. So I don't think there's any harm done if you... And we're not going to be holding you to it. We would just...
You
just want to have a look at something and, you know, in line with what the thinking was here, and then see, we might reject it, we might take to it and start working on it.
Just trying to tap into the wisdom and experience.
Yeah.
So let's have a break.
The intention is just to restrict the classification of information,
mm-hmm,
the unnecessary information. It
that's
must be that illegitimate.
That's a good start. They're starting as well now.
To all of us,
you're starting very well now.
You know, even the judges in the High Court will say to you, what were they talking about?
Who was chairing that meeting?
Yes, but you understood.
Okay, I'm
in. So you want to drink
alcohol? What? So what you come back, wrap up the thing back in come to the end of the process. I think very useful process that we've gone through. But I would recommend that we get the staff to draw up a document based on what has been said here, that we can use that as a working document and circulate it as soon as it's been done. Then by way of what's going to happen tomorrow, We were intending to meet here at 9. I'm not happy with the venue because the previous venue that we had, there was a committee that was dealing with public hearings, and they had requested us to swap venues with them because they were dealing with public hearings at the time. We swapped venues with them on the understanding that there were microphones here and that the venue would be big enough and so on. So I'm going to ask the secretary to look into that. If it's okay with the members, we'll notify you. Let's say that the meeting will take place here tomorrow, but our intention is to change the venue back to
V454.
That's the venue that we originally had. Maybe we're the, you know, the big venue. So that would be 9 o'clock tomorrow, and the minister will be there. Please bring all your documents with. I would suggest you also bring your information documents with in the event there is enough time. We've asked him to come to address us on those issues, and we'd be allowed to put questions to him. Members, then allow me to thank you for coming to the meeting, the media, the state law advisor, the other honourable members. The meeting stands adjourned until tomorrow.
Thank you. Well, this is a
thank you.
Is that meeting going to be open tomorrow for the minister?
Yes.